Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast, everybody. I'm Steve here, and we got another what? Banger on our hands, folks. All about my guy, Big Herc. If you don't know who Big Herc is, he is a 916 Sacktown 916 coming in with 9-inch dicks. Legend, folks. Big Herc. We're going to do a little bit of a different episode this time, okay? Number one, if you guys want to go on to Spotify every once in a while, I put out questions there asking you guys how you're liking the podcast, which way we're going. I am not getting away from, classic Steve Fury interviewing his friend over a criminal that no one's ever heard of that's super disturbing. No, but this one is an interview pod, and I might do another interview pod. Might start switching it up, folks. This might be just a channel where I try to express myself artistically, but pretty much stands true to the same format. This one is an interview podcast recorded live at the Comedy Store. Let's go through the normal transgression of this episode, you know? If you guys don't know, there's a formula. I open up saying what the episode's about with a synopsis, Big Herc's bio. Let's just go over that. If you guys want to check out, get a little glimpse, get a little teaser of who Big Herc is, feel free to go on to Vice.com or Hulu has Vice. And he's under one of the documentaries called I Was a Teenage Felon. Now, saying he was a teenage felon doesn't give even the closest amount of what this guy's journey was. And I know, Steven, are you glorifying criminals? Sometimes, but you know, most of these guys get in trouble, and Big Herc really got in fucking trouble. Number one, started out dealing crack cocaine in Del Paso Heights of Sacramento, California. 916, stand up, we're happy to show out. Goes to jail. So we're going to learn about, in this episode, we're going to learn about what it's like to sell crack, what it's like to go to juvie, the boys' ranch, what it's like to get out, what it's like to start slanging heroin, what it's like to go to jail, what it's like to be a porn star in over 400 movies, what it's like to do an armed robbery bank takeover, what it's like to go to jail for 10 years in Lompoc and really start hearing about the culture there, and then what it's like to get out and find his true purpose in life. No, you think everyone's true purpose is slaying, just laying pipe like fucking Mario, Super Mario. But no, this man's true journey in life was to come out and start a YouTube channel show called Fresh Out that interviews people fresh out of jail to get their stories and show that you can get out of prison and turn your life around. And he has done this to the number of almost 600,000 subscribers on YouTube, folks. We're not talking about your run-of-the-mill views, okay? My man has lived a renaissance life. You think the next Dos Equis man should be Big Herc? So that's really it on that one. That's the opening on that. I don't have to go too deep into it. This is going to be a one-parter. Okay, we're going to see. I also got another guy I'm interviewing, should be interviewing tomorrow. I'm going to check in. He is a ex-police officer in Florida. Okay, that's cool. It's not that cool. What are you doing there? He did hostage negotiations. Okay, that's pretty cool. Is he still a cop now? No, he lost his job. Why? For smoking meth. You see what I'm doing here, folks? I'm getting stories layered. Because, you know, I'm going to be honest, folks. We need to start bumping up these numbers. We're peaking out. We were getting about 2K. We're going down. Start sharing this, folks. Trying to build something for you guys, for me, that's just weirder than everywhere else on the internet. And so if you ever have any comments or complaints or you want to talk to me, one, feel free to interview or feel free to DM me on Instagram. Number two, you can go on to Spotify. And they have questions under some of the podcasts. You can answer them, and you can talk to me. Some of them are just open-ended questions, like the one with the fentanyl one, where I heard a lot of you guys talk stories about that, and it hits, just hits home so much, you know? Which I haven't really pardoned in a while, but you know what the last drugs I bought were? Fentanyl strips. Just because. Well, you know why? Because my birthday might be coming up, and your boy might be having a good time. Been a while since Steve Fury had a good time. It's true, folks. It's my goddamn birthday. April 14th. I'm turning 33, born 1989. Am I bummed out? No. You know why? You know, actually, let's before we get into that, I want to talk about something I've been wanting to say for a long time, and it's about man periods. You know, do we bleed from our nether regions? Okay, no. Okay, I'll agree. I mean, sometimes, but that's more when I've, you know, not enough vegetables. But no, I do not believe that men bleed from their nether regions that often. But I definitely believe men have periods. And now, my Steven, you're negating what the struggle that women go through. Okay, you know, I'm not what you guys go through every month is fucking up. But what I'm saying is, I feel that for me and some other guys, maybe you live with a man, maybe you're talking to someone, maybe you are a man. I feel every couple months I go through a man period. And I'm talking every 3 to 6 months, where for about 2 weeks, I am off. I'm depressed. I'm moody. I'm hungry. I sleep too much. And you know what? What I do is, this is a little trick. Whenever I feel like that, I take a thing of Midol, I crush it up, and I rail it. And let me tell you, folks, does not help, but it does set your brain on fire. No, but I was definitely going through one of those man period thing. You know, was it because of the Netflix thing? Yeah, no, man. I mean, it was just kind of interesting. The only problem, I don't need to get into sad shit. Not sad, just pathetic things that you don't get something. What, you're just going to be sad about the whole time? This whole industry is about not getting things. Your whole life is about not getting things. Because guess what? When you get things, that doesn't show shit about who you are. It's when you lose things. And when I lost that, I acted like a little bitch. So that's who I am. Did I break mirrors? Every mirror in my house. Shattered them. I live on the 5th floor, not to brag, top floor living. Started chucking out furniture. I have no more TVs. My cat's gone. Launched into the night skies. No. But I did go through a man period. You know, I had a lot of things. Because I'm going to be honest, I've had a great year. Probably better than most. Probably the best year of my life. And the last month or so, maybe this whole beginning of this year has been a little rough. My leg thing is starting to get on, you know, it's starting to, this could be a big problem for the rest of my life. It's starting to take away a lot of things that I wanted to do. For instance, I was scared I wasn't going to be able to go on the back on the Burt tour. But guess what, folks? The big man called me back, and your boy's back in Nashville, goddammit. We're going to Nashville. I'm playing the goddamn Grand Opry. You hear that, folks? Steve Fury, Sacramento Zone, is playing the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. And I'm also playing the Ryman. Now, listen, I know what you're saying. Steve, you're not playing a goddamn thing. You're opening for the big man. You're right, folks. I'm not that. What I'm doing is I'm setting the table for the big man to, for the big man to feast. And guess what? You know what happens when you set the table? You're done. Your job's done. And I love it. I love opening for big guys. Also have another huge announcement here. I got picked up for a couple shows. Well, just one right now, but I think it's going to be a little bit of a scope out for your boy. May 28th in Tahoe, I will be with Andrew Santino. That's right, but folks, another theater act. Picked your boy up. Hopefully this will be the one of many with him. So, you know, if someone said, Steve, would you rather have gotten that Netflix New Faces things or go back on tour with Burt and maybe pick up some weekends with Santino? I would have chose that. Why? Because I love doing stand-up comedy. I love opening for big acts. And I don't really know, folks, what to say about anything anymore. Let's see what happened. Got some glasses. Got four pairs of glasses. Let's see. Let's see if some folks, if you're watching. Oh, okay. These are the pink ones. I got pink glasses. Now, this is not a plug for iBuyDirect, but let's just say I bought direct. EYEBYEBYBUYDirect.com. I have been a Warby Parker. I've been a Gucci. I've been a lot of Warby Parkers, okay? And what are those glasses running? Ray-Bans. We're running about $130 to $300 for a pair of glasses. I went to iBuyDirect. I bought five pairs of glasses, okay? I would say two of them. I would say one. I should never be caught outside wearing. I mean, this one right here, you see me if you come on. These are some blue Buddy Hollies. Okay, these are probably going to be inside the house, you know. These ones aren't going to be blessed the world with these things. Then the worst glasses I ever got, I call these the planner's peanuts. They're the tiny circle ones. I look like I am telling Harry Potter that he cannot have a wand because he's a muggle. That's what I look like in this. And I own these now for the rest of my life. These glasses will be in circulation in my house. There will be so many times when I go into a plentiful box of glasses that I own. And I sift through them, and I grab these, and I put them on my face, and I say, fuck these, I shouldn't have got these. But then I come back with the old pinkies. These pinkies, look at these, folks. These are pink glasses, prescription, beautiful tortoise on the sides, pinkies up top, looking great. And I got one pair of glasses that I really fucking love. And guess what, guys? It was like $130. $130 for four pairs of glasses. So check them out. This is non-paid ad. Oh, very excited, folks, to go back on the road with Bert and Santino. Honestly, I thought Bert might have been done with me. Not for any ways. I mean, to be honest, if Bert never talked to me again for the rest of my life, what he had given me the last 2.5 years was some of the best years of my life. I've got to experience things I never did. So I wasn't be sure. And you know, the opening for somebody game isn't a lifetime game. You know, I mean, it is if you're some people, but it's, you normally go in and out. So I was like, okay, thought my time happened. I thought, you know, wish I would have gone a little longer, but it turns out Bert's the best person in the world. And when you get alone in your room, you start thinking things and people don't like you, and you make up these weird ass situations in your head. Luckily, I don't talk about them to anybody. What this is? Is this talking about people? I don't know. I didn't complain to anybody. But guess what? Your boy Steve is back on the road with Bert and maybe and Santino for one show, but hopefully more. Man period was on it. I'm off of it. Just feeling content right now and hoping this feeling continues. My birthday's this week, so if you have followed me for a long time, I do a, if you'd like to buy me a drink, I toast to you on my Instagram, okay? So this year, I did it for 2 years during the pandemic because people couldn't buy me drinks. This year, I am going to do it again, folks. We're bringing it back. And what I'd like to do is I will, if you want to buy me a drink, I will toast to you in my stories. I'll put my Venmo up. Venmo's at Stephen, STEPHEN-FUREY. And now if you send me any increment of money, I will cheers to you and maybe say something funny. This gets pretty funny because there's a lot of times maybe 100 people that do it. So by the end, I am blacked out. And what I'd love to do this year is I would love to do all of them, as many as I can do, then cut them up into a video, a reel, and post that. And I think it'd be very funny. Steve, you're 33 years old this year. Thank you very much for remembering my age. It's very interesting. Don't you think these kind of games are done? This is what I think to you. My whole life is a game, folks. Right now, I've been sober for 5 days. Oh, the Christmas party. I got to talk about that, too. Okay, or not Christmas party, the 150 year. So I've been sober 5 days, not a single drink. My birthday is Thursday. Gonna get wild, okay? It's just gonna happen, folks. And if you want to be a part of it, you can Venmo me. What else we want to talk about? Oh, I bought some shoes recently, some Bapes. They look like Air Force Ones. They were very cool about 20 years ago, and I bought them, and I'm just so happy. And it's just, it's funny about my generation. I feel like they just spend money on the things that they couldn't have as kids. And I don't know why that is. I definitely think it is a very millennial thing. Like, you see guys, grown-ass men. You see, like, a dude, you see, like, a drug dealer, and he's got, like, a Rugrats hoodie. And you're like, okay, I don't understand what's happening here. Maybe it's a TV generation. Maybe it's we're the first ones to get on the internet. We don't really know what we're doing. But I always wanted a pair of Bapes, and I bought them, and I've been jazzed, man. It's so funny how people say, my favorite ones are when rich people say, money doesn't buy you happiness. And it's like, yeah, okay, but I'd still rather be unhappy rich than unhappy poor. There's so many things that rich people say that got into our consciousness that I feel like are trying to screw us over. Like the one, you don't ask other people how much they make. That's only rich people. Okay, poor people will tell you how much they make all the time. It's like, what? Guacamole's $3 extra. I made $35,000 last year. My favorite one, too. There's this guy. Should I name names on this podcast? No, I won't name names. There's no need for that kind of nonsense. So this gentleman, he's got a bit on Comedy Central, their stand-up YouTuber, Instagram. You can find out. And he is complaining in the bit. He's like being a man of the people in the bit, and he's complaining that our parents ruined the housing market and how people complain about people our age not buying houses and renting when in fact it's people older than us. That's their fault. And to that I say, you know, if this gentleman came from, I know this gentleman. I've had many conversations with him, and he has told me that in multiple conversations, never asked once, that he always talks about. He was like, well, when I grew up in the owner's box of the Red Sox. The owner's box of the Red Sox. And then this guy's talking about a housing market getting fucked. I'm like, number one, I doubt you're going to have problems with that. This is what my problem is. Okay, we'll keep going to it. We'll keep going down this hall. I goes, he's complaining. It's like, okay, but it's like, number one, why is your bit talking to an audience? Shouldn't you be talking to the people in the owner's box of the Red Sox of why the housing market is this? Because guess what, dude? I don't think my family, anyone I know, or my mom, Paul and Sandy, my dad and mom, Paul and Sandy, were the ones fucking up the housing market for everybody. Doing predatory loans, setting up our economy so that it's harder for rich or poor people to get ahead. I think it might have been your family that did that. That's the thing with, that's a cool thing right now that I've noticed from some of my rich friends who have kids. Their kids, rich people want to cosplay as poor people because they, their parents or them fucked everything up. And it's like, no, you don't get to do that. You don't get to take the only nice thing about growing up without a ton of money away from us. But you guys know how I feel about generationally wealthy people. I don't mind it. You can't determine who your parents are, but you still, it's like, this is how rich people feel to me, okay? With anything they accomplish, whether, no matter how wonderful it is. It's, you ever go, this might be a guy's thing, I don't know. You ever go to your friends, you talk to your friend, okay? And he's like, I play Madden. And you're like, oh, I think I'm pretty good at Madden. And he goes, well, I beat the computer 80-0. And you're like, holy moly, this guy beats him 80-0. That's incredible. And then you go over to the house and he's playing on rookie mode, lowest mode. And you're like, oh, I've been playing on Hall of Fame all Madden mode. We're not the same. And so for that other person to be like, no, we're the same. It's the same game. I've just been doing a little better. It's like, yeah, dude, because you got cheat codes. So what you do isn't as impressive. Is it still impressive if you do some crazy shit? Yeah, but you're hidden from the ladies' tees. All right, we're getting too long right now. 50-year party at the Comedy Store. How was it? It was fantastic. It was really great. So every year the Comedy Store has a pretty great Christmas party, and this year they didn't do it. And they've been building up to this 50-year for since the beginning of the year. They've been talking about it. How was it? Man, it was pretty cool when you got there. They set up the whole parking lot into like these multiple food stations, and the place was jam-packed with comedians throughout time, some of the most famous ever, some of the most little guys. They had Willie and Lester, if you've ever really familiar with stand-up comedy or you're seeing pictures in the Comedy Store. It's this old black guy, and he's got a puppet, Willie and Lester. And the funny thing is the picture was taken in the hallway in probably the 70s, and the man looks exactly the same. Mainly because people in their in the 70s look like they were in their 70s. And that was pretty cool. We raged pretty hard. Only went to about four. Normally the Christmas parties were you would go as long as possible. What was really great was I was able to see Adam Egit, which was the old booker of the Comedy Store. Very important figure in my life. He's the guy who passed me at the Comedy Store. And he is also the man who gave me a door guy job. Also saw the old manager, Eric, and one of the old managers, Curtis. They are both going down to everyone there I just talked about. Eric, Curtis, and Adam are all going down to Joe Rogan's new club in Austin called The Mothership. Not a great name, but you know what? Joe is awesome. Just not a great name. And they're going to go run that place. So I'm going to have some fun going down there and visiting everybody. And it was just a great night, man. The place looked beautiful. Food were flowing, open tab drinks, crazy band. It was a great time, and it was really really nice. I want to give a shout-out to the Comedy Store. All right, so we're going to go to the episode. This is a one-and-done. This ain't a two-parter, okay? I'm going to start trying to mix it up, man, because it does seem like the one-parter pods you guys like more. But, you know, maybe I'll put that this time right now in the questions. On the Spotify account, do you like them split up? Because also, you know, I get it. You'd rather just have one full episode. But do you guys understand how hard it is to get a 12-page paper, deep research done about a subject, and then do that every week? One, I don't have the time to write them that much. My researchers don't have the time to write them that much. So it's kind of, we're just going to be juggling the world. We're going to be having a good time, seeing what happens. This episode, to me, is fantastic if you enjoy the stuff I'm doing. Which is trying, it's not the funniest episode, that's for sure, but it is the most, if you like wild stories about criminals you never heard of, this guy is not a criminal anymore. He's a reformed individual that is really fucking crushing it, and I'm really proud of to see someone turn their life around like this, you know, to put their nose to the ground, start a show that no one else was doing at the time, and turn his life around. So give a shout out. I'm giving a shout out to goddamn Big Herc on this week's Excellent World on Drug podcast, recorded live at the Comedy Store with Comedy Store Records. Stuff that you should watch before I get out of here. I've really been enjoying the F1 show on Netflix. It goes deep into F1 driving. And obviously, you know, I'm not a big driving sport guy. I think going in a circle is kind of lame. Well, one, these tracks don't go in a circle. Number two, they more just go deeply into who these people are. And each guy is a crazy person. Each driver is a crazy person. They're a crazy robot person that only cares about themselves. And people die. I mean, I think it's season two and there's like three or four people have died already. Definitely makes you get into a sport. Because you know now when I check out an F1 racing, I know what everybody's name is. I know how beating someone can mean something. It's just very interesting. Also, my mom, Sandra, don't want to give out her name, gave out a show called Top Boy. I might be a little late to this one, Top Boy on Netflix. It is like Snowfall or The Wire, but takes place in England with English black ice, who it kind of Jamaican. Really hard to understand, but still pretty great. They call cocaine food over there, and conversations get very heated over food, which also happens with me food-wise because I'm arguing about food, what I love to eat. Other than that, guys, check out the podcast on Spotify. We're going to have some questions up there if you guys like this. Hopefully you like this episode. Also, My Venmo is at Stephen, Stephen dash Furey. If you want a shirt, I do have some World on Drugs shirts. Venmo me $26. That should include the shipping in there and with your address, and I will get you a shirt as soon as possible. Once again, Venmo at Stephen dash Fury, Stephen dash Furey. And then got to give a shout out to West Coast Gardens. Once again, still my favorite. Since getting this weed, my face has melted multiple times. Once again, West Coast Garden and Grizzly PDX. If you guys are in Portland, I am thoroughly enjoying the weed that Grizzly PDX is doing. But if you're in California, West Coast Gardens, my man Mike Olson from Sacramento, he's got the Zittles, the Scotty Cake, the Guava Gelato, in the Gelato 42 or something like that. All these weeds are so fantastic. I've got four, and what I like to do is switch on all four. Because, okay, I've smoked weed a long time, and if you smoked weed a long time, you can kind of know. Sometimes you can get immune to a strain. So I've been switching them up. Sometimes I make a blunt with each one in there. So I call it a salad blunt with a bunch of different kind of vegetables. Just fantastic. Get some of that stuff. Get some of the West Coast Gardens or the Grizzly PDX. Smoke that shit. Listen to this episode of Big Herc. Shout out to Comedy Store Records. Shout out to you guys. Love y'all. Enjoy the show. Big Herc. Hey. Thanks for coming in, buddy.
Hey, appreciate the opportunity.
I've been waiting for this for a while. Mainly from, I had one of my buddies tell me I should check out the Vice Doc.
Okay.
And then I saw it, and it was fantastic, and I saw all those. Because I just love what Vice is doing right now with the whole Hulu network. So that was really cool to see on there. You're from Sacramento, right?
From Sacramento originally.
I am too. I'm from, I went to McClatchy.
Oh, wow. McClatchy. We played you guys in football.
Yeah, were you Grant?
Highlands.
Highland, yeah.
We beef with Grant.
Yeah.
Highlands and Grant did not get along.
I don't think they still get along.
Oh, the Heights and Highlands.
Yeah.
That's long-standing feud.
Yeah. I definitely remember playing all them. That's cool. Then when I saw you, that you were from Sacramento, I was like, okay, I definitely want to see if I can get him on the podcast next time he comes in here. So, I would say I definitely want to get into the jail and prison stuff.
Okay.
Which you have a sick, what's your show called?
Fresh Out.
It's on YouTube and it's pretty big.
Yeah, pretty big. We have up to date over 300 million views.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really great. And that's why if you guys don't know what it is, you talk to people fresh out. You explain this.
Well, I talk to people. Some of them are fresh out. Some of them have been out for a while. But I show the people who have changed their lives who try to show a different aspect of prison. We're not glorifying. We're not saying it's a rite of passage. Oh, you're my OG because I went to prison. We're saying we made mistakes. You could change your life. And the best thing is to avoid prison all out, you know.
And you get about and you guys talk about real stuff.
Real stuff, man. Yeah. I mean, I've been through every part of the system, juvenile hall, CYA, you know, federal prison. So I've seen every aspect and it's not nice.
Okay, well, let's start getting, because I want to learn all about this. I sold drugs for quite a long time, from like about 14 to 26, but I never really got in trouble that much. So I didn't really deal with a lot of the stuff, but I always find it very interesting. And I just try to, you know, shine a light on stuff that people aren't familiar with. And I just want to get in first. So first you started slanging, right?
I started slanging. I went from BMX and skateboarding, living in San Francisco, doing my thing in Embarcadero. Wanting to be the next Tommy Guerrero, Tony Hawk, and moved back to Sacramento. Because I used to, you know, I grew up in Sacramento, but I had moved away for a while. I was living on Treasure Island in the Bay Area.
Yeah, it's a cool little place.
Moved back. My mom got divorced, and I moved into a part of North Highlands that was a drug area. And, you know, kind of fell into that lifestyle, man. Seeing guys around me selling drugs and wanting to kind of fit in and also make some money. And I just got involved in slanging, man. You know, crack was real big back then, and I didn't know anything about crack. I didn't know how it worked. I've never used drugs, but I knew that these guys who used to come up to my school that were graduated years before, they were drug dealers, and I wanted to be a drug dealer.
Okay, so your first day. Now, are you jumping? A lot of people, you know, you start selling weed first. And then you see your buddy who sells blow, and you're like, damn, this motherfucker makes a lot more goddamn money than me. Or did you jump straight into dope?
Well, I used to see guys at school in the lunch line with wads of money, always wearing different, you know, shoes and fancy clothes. I'm like, man, what do they do, man?
Yeah.
I'm like, how are they doing this? They're only sophomores in high schools, you know? I'm like, and somebody's like, oh, he sells drugs. I'm like, he's selling drugs. What do you sell? He says crack. He sells cocaine. I'm like, is that right? I'm like, man, where you get it from? You know, who has that? Yeah, you know, I don't know. So there was a older homeboy, and I had an idea that he was kind of street orientated. So I was like, hey, man, where can I get some rocks? He's like, oh, come through and I'll hook you up. So I had a $20 for my little lounge. And I had $20. So I took my $20. My mom was at work. My brother and sister, my grandma, I think, was babysitting them. And I had a little 10 speed. And I rode from my part of the neighborhood across to the other part of the neighborhood where my friend lived at. Got a $40 double up. Came back. Had two rocks for $20. I seen somebody and they looked at me. I looked at them, kind of gave them the look, pulled over, and sold my first rock. And within 5 minutes, I sold the next one, went You're back on. Across the neighborhood, came back, and by the end of the day, I had like $150 within like three trips. So I was like, damn, this is a hustle right here.
Yeah. Still do that, hopefully. I mean, we find something that good. So, okay, so then you found your first plug. Now, this is a question I always kind of – so are you buying coke and then turning it into crack, or are you buying crack?
Buying crack. It was already rocked up. The homie already had it, and he would just chip it off. He had a big ball. I don't know. Back then, maybe he had like an ounce or something, mm-hmm. half ounce. He would just cut off a piece. And then based on what I had kind of estimated from other guys, I try to make my rocks a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So that way – you know, because the street I lived on, it was a dope street, and there was already a bunch of guys selling drugs. I mean, literally, you could drive down my street and look like In-N-Out Burger. I mean, there was cars lined up. People were selling drugs broad daylight, just playing music, shooting dice, dominoes. It's like, damn.
It's like a taco cart.
Like taco cart. Like literally, nobody was doing nothing. Cops drive by, everybody standing around, and they, you know, so this is back then. So, yeah, and I was one of the youngest guys on that street selling drugs. I was 15, and all these guys were like probably in their 30s. So we just kind of like niched our little part of that little drug trade out and just started selling rocks, man, getting double ups.
Now, why did they let you sell on their turf? Was it because you're buying their stuff, so it's kind of the same thing, or were you just homies with them or something?
I never bought any drugs from those guys there. I had my own connections, which were like mm-hmm. some older guys I went to school with, but I got my respect. I mean, there was a couple of guys that used to come out there. I mean,
you're also a pretty big-ass fucking dude.
Well, back then, I was smaller. I was probably 160-something. You know, I was skateboarding before that. But I let guys know that I'm not a punk. Like, you're not going to mm-hmm. take my drugs. I kept a Rambo knife on me. My homeboy had a .22 that we kept in the bushes. And, you know, when these guys would look at us, we're like, dude, we're not playing. Because you're competing with probably 10 other people selling the same rocks.
Yeah.
And everybody had different rocks from different connections. So you know, and some guys are like, you know, that's my customer. Hey, man, watch out.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah.
had to, it was pretty grimy. I mean, you know, I wasn't going to say I wasn't scared, but you couldn't look like you were
yeah.
scared because these were grown men.
Yeah. 100%. Would you, now, did you ever get robbed?
Never got robbed.
Never got robbed. That's pretty good.
No.
I got robbed one time. Had a gun right to my head.
Oh,
guy goes, you know what time it is? I'm like, I know exactly what fucking time it is. It's time for me to give you what I have. How much was the most you ever thought you made one day?
In one day, I mean, rock for rock. I mean, back then, I mean, and I didn't have good money management.
Yeah.
I was young. Probably $800, maybe close to $1,000 selling rocks. Just
in one day
down.
Is pretty good.
In
yeah.
one day, yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I didn't really know the breakdown because nobody was teaching me. So instead of getting like $800 double up, $1,000, I could have got quarter pound, a QP, you know.
Oh, yeah, the price goes down so much more.
Guys weren't telling me because they're like,
yeah.
damn, you're done already? Here, get another double
up.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
they were working me,
yeah.
and I didn't know any better.
Yeah. You just had, I kind of had, that was my first guy was that I did it with weed. I remember I could get 2 grams for $10. And so I would go and take half the gram, sell the gram, and then I'd have two.
Yeah.
And I could just keep multiplying like that until I found out.
Get a pound,
yeah.
exactly.
Once you got an ounce, you're like, damn, this is like a quarter as expensive. This motherfucker was fucking me. So have you ever seen any of the guys you used to deal with? Like the plugs? My plug passed away.
Yeah, well, a lot of the guys, it's crazy because I see them on Facebook, but we're still cool.
Facebook
and they see like, man, you done changed your life. You're doing this and that. And a lot of these guys pretty much retired. You know, some of them got regular jobs now. Mm-hmm. A couple of them got their own businesses. So for the most part, most of the guys I really hustled with back then have either elevated into something else legit or they're working like, you know, a city job.
Yeah.
You know, so they're out of the game.
Do you remember, because we'll start transferring to the next one, do you remember the last time you sold drugs?
Man, shit, nah. I mean, no. Probably before I cut my federal case, I mean, back in 99, I mean, I used to sell, back then it was pounds of meth, quarter pounds of meth.
Well, okay, so when do you, okay, so we jumped in. Yeah, there's way more juice on this one. Yeah. When do you switch from coke to meth? Oh, that was after prison.
That was after
prison.
Yeah, okay. That was like after I had already went to juvenile hall and CYA, and then I had moved back and forth from Sacramento, and I had went from weed. I went through all type of whatever back then, hustling, whatever I can hustle.
Well, shit, back. Well, then let's go into some prison stuff, and then we'll go into the meth one.
Yeah, well, meth was before I went to federal prison. Okay, after I got the feds, I didn't touch shit.
Yeah.
I totally changed. When I got arrested for that crime, and I got 120 months, I had an epiphany in my life, and I'm like, dude, it's a wrap. I got to change my ways.
Okay, well, let's just go into it. So, now, when you were selling meth, it was probably pretty new, wasn't it?
Back in, this is like, meth was popping 98, 99, it was off the hook. It was like, I had to connect, and,
Were there like meth heads running around yet?
There were meth heads, 96, 97, 98. Though it was really, the meth game was big. I had friends that were making thousands of dollars a day selling meth. I mean, you know, people weren't like super strung out yet, but they were on their way. But back then they had like, you know, you had some people were getting like strawberry flavor, like strawberry looking meth.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, remember it had that like kind of like a little like pinkish hue. That stuff would go like hot. I mean, as soon as you had it, it was gone. Then you had a stuff that was kind of like really soft, almost like putty. Then you had different qualities. I mean, so it was a bunch of different kinds. It wasn't like ice where it was super hard and it's hella expensive. This was like, it was cheap, but it was moving fast. But that game, when you talk about robberies, like my partner who I used to get, got robbed a couple times and we had to go put in work. I mean,
yeah.
That game is vicious.
Yeah, it seems like it's the end of the end of like the
end
worst
of the
one.
End. The people in that, no matter what they need to get that, they're gonna come or they're gonna tell somebody else and they're gonna rob you. They're gonna either wait for you to go to bed, catch you leaving your house. I mean, it's just a low frequency, just bottom of the barrel, this class down there. It's just horrible.
So, what would you go? What do you think that? What's the difference between the crack game and the meth game?
Crack game, you know, it was more back then. It was the brothers hustling. It was in the hood. You know, it was kind of like, okay, now the meth game, you're dealing with more white people.
Mm.
So it was a different, you know. If you
bikery.
Bikery, yeah, you know what I mean? You had a connection with the bikers, Mexicans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They had the plug. You know, I had the plug, and they were, you know, able to make it. And so it was a different crowd, but the people that were in it, and the brothers, everybody was robbing everybody. Yeah. So if, like, Sacramento, for people who don't know, is super grimy. Nobody in Sacramento really got to a point where they got super balling, because if people heard about you, like, it's so small, people are like, oh, you're so-and-so with the blue Mustang?
Yeah.
You'd be known across town. If somebody's going to rob you, Sacramento's that small. People start talking, oh, that's Steve. He's got that. He's got the Porsche. Steve with the Porsche.
Yeah, especially if you've got a car.
Yeah.
If you got the car that everyone notices.
Everybody knows. Yeah. So you
got a 5.0 on rims or something.
That's Steve with the D's on. Oh, okay. We're going to get him. Yeah. So pretty soon you got bras trying to set you up, dudes trying to set you up. So you had to be careful, man. And a couple of times my people got robbed, man. I got calls and it was crazy, man. We had to go and you know, some incidents. Luckily, I didn't get caught up, but man, it could have been all bad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then you want to start going. Let's go into get in jail, because this is where you seem to know it. The most, I mean, it's what your show's about. You're almost like a historian of jail courts, or probably across the country.
Well.
So how do you get locked up?
Following that whole bit of selling drugs is basically just, it was a cycle of bad choices, which led to the bank robbery. So living in Sacramento, selling meth, you know, selling coke, selling guns, sometimes wherever I can sell, end up going back to L.A., and having worked in adult entertainment.
Oh, okay. Industry. Then let's go to the adult industry. Because I thought the vice went drugs, jail, adult industry.
It did.
Bank robbing, jail.
Yeah, it did. It did. So I did adult industry, went back to selling drugs, and then went back to adult industry, and then got caught up again and went back to jail.
Okay. Well, then let's go into the adult industry real quick, because I got a decent amount of. So how, let's explain how do you get into it?
I got into the adult industry initially after I caught my home invasion case when I was 18. So from 18 to 21, I did time. I did 2 years, 8 months in California Youth Authority. For those that don't know, that's like gladiator school. I mean, it's
I hear juvenile hall is worse than prison.
Dude, juvenile hall. Do you ever heard of the Boys Ranch? In fact,
yeah.
I was at the Boys Ranch for like 4 months.
Yeah, I heard that.
And Boys Ranch back then, I mean, super like, gangbanging.
Yeah, it's like they're psycho kids because they probably murdered people and they're like 13 years old.
I was in a room with a guy who looked like Helter Skelter, and I could have swore, I'm like, this dude, he's a cold murderer. You could feel like this dark.
Yeah, and
like,
he's not even 18 yet.
These cats and shit. You know, I had this cat. You know, the stuff you're like, all right, man, you're laying on your bunk with looking up, you know, watching this dude because he's crazy. So literally, that's the breeding ground for people who become like the next, you know, Charlie Manson. But
let's go into that then, because this is all the type of stuff I like to get into. So let's get into juvie then. Now, at the Boys Ranch in Sacramento, it's juvie, right?
Yeah, juvie.
And it's known as a pretty rough
fucking
place. So now, are you getting your own cell, or are you doing the open air?
You're in the open air. So when I was selling crack when I was 15, I got busted, went to juvenile hall, and I got busted actually twice. So the second time, the judge made me a ward of the court, and I had to do 3 months, 28 days. That's the beginning program in the Boys Ranch. But that could be extended. You can keep getting months. You could be there for a year. And then if you keep messing up, they'll recommit you and you go to CYA.
So it's a jail, kind of.
It's a kid jail, yeah. But it's a big ass, it's slaughterhouse, way out in the middle of nowhere. It's a big farm. They got cows out there, pigs, and they got it's a ranch. And you know,
you guys like making your like taking care of your own food, because then you guys eat that shit or something.
No,
or
they're just trying to teach you stuff. You trying to teach you some stuff, like you. We didn't get to slaughter any of the animals, but you like maintain the ranch, and then they got like trade jobs. Some people go to trade jobs. Then you got school, and then it's like a big dormitory. But I mean, imagine a dormitory with dudes wilding out.
Yeah, it's like you're wilding sleeping
out. Every hood, Oak Park, South Sac, Elder Creek, Creek Mob, you know, Del Paso Heights, Highlands, Rancho Cordova. Everybody's banging up in there.
Circle.
Not one person is. Everybody's banging. Everybody back then was benching 250. You know what I mean? Everybody up in there is just wilding out, man.
So would you say that you see a cell, being in a cell is better than that open barracks kind of thing? Well, what do you think is better between those two? Or what's the difference?
I would say.
What would you prefer?
I wouldn't prefer neither one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's both horrible.
Obviously.
But, you know, in a dorm, basically, you know, you have open access, so dudes can just run up in there, you know, at night. So it's like on the weekends, I remember you sleeping like this, because dudes would put a lock in a sock and go to work on somebody, beat the shit out of them, you know what I mean? So anything can happen in a dorm because it's open.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the most terrifying. That's sleeping open. It's like sleeping in, like, the ocean where, like, a shark could fucking get
you.
You
have no
from any way.
Nothing. Only thing you're hoping for, like... Luckily, when I got there, my big homie was there, and then I had another crazy dude I knew that was there. So, you know, shit happened. I had to get into some shit. But yeah, it was horrible, man. Juvenile hall. I mean, at the Boys Ranch, once you got an honor program, so once you got so many good weekends, you got so many points, you can go out on weekends. These guys are come on the weekends. They would literally go out. And they were selling drug on a whole nother level than I was, because most of these guys' family were drug dealers.
Yeah.
But they'd go out, oh, I got rid of half a bird. Oh, man, I got rid of two birds. I got rid of, you know, 16 ounces, 20 ounces. I mean, these dudes were balling on the weekends, coming back, hooking up, dumping weight. So these were career.
Yeah, they
at
were,
15,
this
16.
This wasn't changing anything.
No, it was literally, these guys were already balling. They were at some whole nother level, and their families were all eating off of this, so it was all accepted. Where my mom was like, this is some bull. I'm not putting up with this. She's like, I can't keep coming to this, you know.
What was a day like? Then we'll move on to the other stuff, but let's go. But what's like, you're at your Boys Ranch when you were there. What is your day looking like?
You get up early in the morning and you go to make your bed. Then you go to breakfast. After breakfast.
Is it disgusting, the food?
Food actually there because of how they tried to. They kind of, you know, they had counselors. So wooden guards would like, you know, these are guys, plain clothes, you know. Some of them, you know, Sac State, psychology majors, different people. So they were, you know, decent people, man, that were there. So the food was, you know, decent. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't horrible, like regular prison.
Because they're trying to change
they're
you
trying
a little
to change
bit.
You.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
they
yeah.
hadn't thrown in, like, you're not, like, written off already. Mm-hmm. Where in the feds, like, dude, you're done. You know, you're a career criminal. But they gave you benefit of the doubt. So after breakfast and you went to your detail, either you went to a trade, maybe you went to, like, work at I remember I had a job. They got to go to this interior shop in the Heights and learn how to sew and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people, before that, I used to work on the farm there. I feed the pigs, move the hay around, you know, rile the cows up and stuff. See, everybody had a job. So you do your job, and then you come back at the, and go to lunch, and then go back to your job. And then after that, you come back, and then you shower, get ready for dinner. And then, so dinner, 4 or 5 o'clock, everybody has their little sections. And, you know, people were, you know, you had a group. In your
now, are they doing it by race like they do it in prison?
No.
Or are
no,
they
no.
doing it more by just homies, your dudes you're chilling with?
Well, it's like you were assigned to a counselor. So each counselor had
their class?
Team, like team blue, team black, team red. And then depending on how your team scored for your chores, so you had chores.
Oh, yeah. It's like almost bathroom, a summer camp or something.
Yes, yeah, stuff well, like that. You get camp, to go to eat but first.
Yeah.
So, and then if you go eat first, you get leftovers.
Yeah.
So you might get second. You get extra hamburgers, roast beef.
Yeah.
So you're trying to keep your area clean. So there was pride like that.
Yeah.
You know, your beds were made nice, military type
yeah.
shit.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
couldn't have, I mean, your shit with your bed, you know, tucked in right and all that stuff. And then you got to hang out and either go to school at night, take whatever school classes. And then, you know, guys watch TV. But like I said, these guys, you know, when you're dealing with a young person like that, you know, from 14 upwards to 18, the maturity level is so low.
I mean, yeah.
So nobody's really, you know, there's no rehabilitation. I'm just in there. You're just in there trying to survive, mm-hmm. literally, and get home to the weekends and try to hook up some chick you got in high school and try to, you know, still bang her on the weekends. But other than that, there was no rehabilitation. I mean, the education in there, when I was in class, I was in as a sophomore. When I got locked up in juvenile hall, I was in chemistry, Spanish 2, trigonometry, typing, and something else, home ec. So my class was pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these dudes have never been to school.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking to people. It's pretty barbaric, man. So you have to try to avoid certain conversation because the conversation like, let's go back here. Let's go in the bathroom. It's not a lot of this bullshit. Not today. You're gonna just throw hands.
Yeah.
After that, it's over with. Okay, come go sit down. You know, and then if you get knotted up, you know, a dude try to like hide out so nobody sees him. But that's everything was handled with fists. Disrespect. Let's go handle it. Let's go in the back. You know, your homeboy watching a blind spot. Okay, that's enough. Hey, that's enough. Come on. And that's it. That's how you handle it.
All right. So after the Boys Ranch, where are you going now? Next.
Boys Ranch. Luckily, my mom got married. I moved to OC, and it was culture shock, Huntington Beach. I ain't never seen no shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, kids with boats in their backyards, you know, kids got businesses. These kids is like, you know, they're not gangbanging. It's just square. So that kept me out of trouble for a little while. Lived in Huntington for 2 years from junior to senior year. Then my mom moved again because her husband was in the military. I went back to SAC, and that's when I got back into the shit. She's getting shot at, fighting, all type of stuff. And then I caught a home invasion case. And then I went to CYA from the time I was 18 to 21. And then during that time is when I still hadn't matured. I was still just living life. But I worked out in there, did my first bodybuilding competition. And when I left there, I got into porn because I had obsessed the whole time I was in there looking at porn books. Like, hey, man, I want to get out and be the next, you know, the next slinger, you know, sling some D.
Okay, so you get out, and how do you start getting in there? What's your, like, first time? What's your first day on that one?
I get out. I'm 21. I meet one of the guys I did time with in CYA. He moved to Orange County. And so we hooked up, and then I heard about the LA Weekly. You know, LA Weekly back then had a little paper ad. Hey, looking for adult stars. I'm like, oh, shit, here's the ad, man, like in one of the movies. So called the ad. You know, went down, did a little introduction off of La Brea in Santa Monica, and took some pictures. And then a week later, I get the call, my first scene, you know, and show up on a set. I didn't know what the hell, man. I never did no shit like this. You know, people over there, you know, they're over there busting cheeks. And then you got people over here, and you're like, there's a cameraman, there's lights, it's hot, sweaty. It's like, damn, you ready? I'm like, shit, man. You know, it's big leagues.
Yeah.
And, you know, did my first scene. And then after I got my check, I'm like, damn, this is it? You know, $150 or something like that. This is back in 94. So back then there was the internet had just started. Mm-hmm. There was no Pornhub or none of that stuff, you know? I mean,
it was all tapes.
It was all tapes, man. So they, you know, used to go to these places in the valley and there'd be just a warehouse full of, you know,
dirty tapes,
the DVD, burning DVDs, you know? It was crazy. So back then it was actually big productions, you know? You had, I remember doing one in Malibu, and they had horses, his ranch. We dressed up as cowboys. It's like you felt like you was a throwback actor.
Yeah.
You know, so I did.
How many did you make? How many you do?
Man, I probably made at least over 300-400 films, maybe more.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. I wrote a book, How to Get Down in a Porn Game. Yeah, I wrote. They're probably like close to a couple hundred films, but it wasn't. It wasn't. It. You know, you can't. You weren't really paying your bills. You
yeah.
know, you had to hang out, kiss a lot of ass, and it was a lot of work. And eventually, I went back to school, college, thinking I was getting my AA. But in between that time, I moved back to the Bay Area into Santa Rosa, met a guy at college that had a weed connect. I started slaying weed, and then went from weed to coke to meth, and then eventually, you know, said, man, I got to leave this Sacramento shit because this is getting real bad again. Went back to L.A., jumped back in the porn game, met some guys met a guy in a porn game.
Well, before we go to this one, I want to ask a couple of porn questions.
Okay.
Okay, so what's the – now, I talked to a few porn, and they said sometimes it could smell very bad.
Oh, my God. I remember one time it was horrible, bro. I told a dude, I said, dude, do you not smell that? The camera guy, he's like, yeah. I said, dude, you better – She's like, look, what's going on? I'm like, he's like, pulled her to the side, went in there, tried to clean that thing. Dude, it was, I'm talking about this whole room, literally your eyes were watering. dude, it's like, I'm cool. I'm not, no.
How many times you got to go a day? And if you like, if you bust it, it's almost like fucking up your words on a script, or it's like, they're like, no, it's okay, we'll just edit it. You just got to get hard again.
No, back then, because they need that money. There was no cream pies. Oh. Before cream pies.
Oh,
so if you
okay.
bust, you no. Get it, hurry up. Oh, can you get it back? Can you get back up? You're like, oh, shit. You're dehydrated. You need some nutrients. You know what I mean? It's pressure. And literally, if you bust early, that word might spread. And you might not get another gig because they're like, dude, he can't finish the scene. And I mean, you would have to do 40-some minutes on all these positions before you can bust, so it's a lot of
it's
work.
Hard. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It's like meditation.
No, there was no Viagra back then.
Yeah.
No Cialis. Straight just animal instinct. Yeah.
Straight just concentration.
Just concentration.
In your chi.
Oh, my God, bro. And then, you know, your girl is like, she's hot, and you're sitting there, and you're like, trying not to get, you're getting your Jordan moment. Okay, let me focus. Meditate. And, you know, because you don't want to hear the outside. As soon as you start getting your head... This head down here doesn't want to work.
Well, that's probably why they keep the guy's head out of frame, because he's just like counting back 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You just think of his grandma trying not to bust.
Yeah, you got to try every trick in the book, because I mean, you know, you
they're extremely hot women.
Oh my God, some of you know, and then like you said, you got some that you know I've seen some where it's like, oh, you know, I've got over a yeast infection. Oh, I'm cool.
Yeah,
I can't do this scene. I'm gonna have to give away this $200.
Yeah, it's probably not worth it.
It's not worth it. It's just a yeast infection. I'm cool. Yeah, you know, I've been working. I cleaned it up and no.
Who was it? So like, if you're like in the porn game, is there ever like, oh, this chick fucking sucks, I gotta kind of carry the scene, or you're like, this chick's really good, this person's like a pro, or you kind of just like put your work hat on, do whatever you gonna do.
You have some. Well, the chicks that were, I think, more amateur were easier because it was more natural. Where you know some chick, it's like overly acting. Yeah. You're like, and then they're sitting there, and it's like they're not really. You know, because dudes, you think, you know, most guys, and they hate these guys too, the guys who want to cuddle. You know, let me, you know, it's straight business. Camera stop. Camera start. You know what I mean? And so it's cold. It's like, you know, you better get up yourself. Some girls, you know, I'm not warming you up.
Yeah.
You know, so when you feel that energy and, you know, people think, oh, I mean, there's no intimacy there.
Yeah.
It's just straight, you know, two objects making a scene. And so it's work. It's not like you think when you're your girlfriend and, oh, you know, you're trying to wait, rub a little bit, and do all this stuff. Ain't none of that. You know, that's all on you. And you go from position, pop. So it's straight to the point. So it's a totally different moment. And it becomes almost like if you're in a business too long, you almost become like sex at that point. It's like, it's not even, there's no intimacy there. It's just robotic.
Did it ruin it for other points of your life, or you're able to separate the two of having sex with someone that you actually like to work?
I think after a while, after you kind of divorce yourself from that business, but like most of the people, like a lot, and I'm not trying to judge them, but you can have very dysfunctional relationships because the chicks are kind of jaded because, you know, most of their boyfriends are like these, they call them you know, suitcase pimps. You know, they're pimping the girls, getting all their money, and then they're getting this, you know, they're hooking up all the other chicks that this girl's bringing around, and then she's feeling like some kind of way because at the end of the day, are you really accepting her after she took 20 dudes? You know what I mean? I mean, and then she can't really go outside that business to find somebody because she finds Square Bob, and then Square Bob's friend's like, dude, I got a video with your girl. And
yeah.
Like, oh, man, you didn't tell me. And it's like, so she really, where does she go? she has to result. And then most of the guys in the business, it's just like a...
Yeah, not the best price.
No, no. You know, the guys aren't like, you know, upstanding and they're trying to like really do something. They're just, you know, working an angle, bounce from chick to chick to chick to chick, you know? So finding a really loving relationship that you can say, hey, you know, I really care about my boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's few and far between.
Okay. After that, you're coming out of that. You meet those two fellas.
Meet the guy, like, you know, moving back to L.A. is roughly about 1999. I'm back in the game, kind of doing my thing, but I'm still going back and forth to Sacramento doing bullshit. And I get propositioned with an opportunity for a bank robbery, which really was an opportunity. And because of my mindset at the time, I entertained it. And, yeah, man, we planned out this bank robbery in Ventura County, and it went all bad, you know. The day was raining, overcast, you know. It's a couple, just weird vibe, you know, that morning of the bank robbery. My mom called me out the blue, you know, and asked me what I was doing. And so that was almost like a sign.
Yeah.
That it wasn't there. I shouldn't have done it. And I was sitting there like, she never called me 7:30 in the morning. She's like, hey, did you watch the episode of Bachelor last night? Blah, blah, blah. They had the season finale. And I'm sitting there like, man, and these dudes are about to come pick me up. And I just brushed it off. And, yeah, man, that day, that was the last day I was seeing the streets for the next, like, almost 9 years, man. We went driving in the rain on the 101 and pulled off in a Thousand Oaks at this bank, as Wells Fargo. And had one driver. It was me and another guy, and had our little ski mask and our guns, and we pulled up.
What was your plan? Were you doing the smash and grab, kind of as quick as possible to get in there? Or what were you guys doing?
Hostile takeover. So, I was the first one out the car. I jumped out the car, had an M1 carbine and the back.
Whoa!
Two 4-door car, 4-door escort. I jumped out, ran inside. Everybody get on the ground. You know, doing the security things. And the guy was there, the security with the gun. The dude followed right behind me, jumped over the counter, give us the money, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, he was kind of like, he was hella adrenaline pumping. He got hella crazy. Hit somebody in the head with a gun, you know, and they're like tripping out. I'm like, oh.
And when he did that, were you like, fuck?
The energy, I knew it was all.
I think, isn't it, once you hit someone or something,
it's another charge.
It's another charge.
It's
a big charge.
Big charge. So he hit that, assaulted them.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, and I'm looking like, dude, this is all bad.
It's going bad.
You know, and I'm
That's
the
moment
clock.
That you feel the shit.
Yeah, and you're looking at the clock, and it's like, you know, in Hollywood, you think you got all this time. So when he did that, the person screaming, crying, then I look outside, I see in the distance in the parking lot a sheriff with a raincoat on, yellow raincoat with a shotgun. And I'm like, dude, it's a wrap. They're already in the area. And so I said, come on, man, come on, hurry up, come on. And I said, come on, man. I run out the bank. And he's like, dude, where's he at? He's like, I told him to come on. He finally runs and jumps in the car. And we go to pull out because it's one of those banks where you pull around. And we pulled out. And as we pulled out to turn onto the main street, a cop car happened to be behind us and it bumped us. Right then, I'm like, fuck, man. So he bumped us and it was right there. It was on. So he bumped us.
Who's driving?
The guy who initially brought up the bank robbery. He's driving. He's passed away now, but he's driving. We drive up the street, and we had another car getaway, a Lincoln Navigator, but we didn't want to go straight there because the cop was following, so we pulled into another parking lot, and the cop cornered us. Get out the car. Put your hands up. I'm like, damn, dude, it's over already, man. This is crazy. And, dude, everybody's, like, panicking, man, and then he guns it. Guns it past the cop. Cop's like, he don't know what to do. Guns it, and then we gun it and try to hurry up and slide into this little – it's like only one of the areas, you know, we have like dental offices and all kind of little buildings. And we pull up in there and they didn't see us. And then we get out, change clothes. We had clothes underneath because we had jumpsuits on.
Got pretty far,
and
yeah.
Then left all that stuff in the car and then jumped into the Navigator. So we jump in a Navigator. But it's early in the morning, man. We're pulling out. Ain't nobody at work yet. So we pull out. It's obvious. There's cops. I mean, there's a shit ton of cops already on the street. Like they're setting up perimeters. And as we pull out, three black guys, they look. And they look, and then, dude, it's on.
Oh!
High-speed chase.
You think maybe if you just would have stayed in the Navigator, like, I don't know.
I mean, maybe if we would have even got in there, took off somewhere else on foot. You know what I mean? But, you know, you'd probably, because by pulling out, we pulled right into their nest, their hornet's nest. Pulled down to the hornet's nest, you know what I mean? They started following us. It's raining. We jump on the freeway. We pull off on the main street, get on the freeway, and, I mean, there's a caravan of police following us. And it's raining. You can't see. were like, dude, he's like, man, you know, just drive, driving through traffic, driving morning traffic, man, you know, morning traffic on a 101, and, you know, going past Calabasas. And we didn't see it. They threw the spike strip down, hit the spike strip. As soon as you hit the spike strip, you know, the tires are blowing out.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know how many miles after that, it's like, dude, I'm going to pull over. The car's out of control. It's raining. As soon as he stopped the car, I jumped out the navigator at the back. I jumped over the center divider, ran across four lanes of traffic, ran up a hill, and tried to find somewhere to hide at. There's nowhere to hide. I'm by Ventura Pier.
Yeah.
So I run. I'm like looking around. Oh man. So and the cops are like, get on the ground. They're already up there. They were miles down there. They had already like alerted everybody. So I got arrested on the boardwalk, and I'm looking out into the ocean, and I'm on the ground like it's a wrap. You know, the other guy, they had sent the canines on them, so the canine ran up in the car and was shaking them, and they pulled them out the car.
Okay. Then you go to jail, or go to prison.
Go to prison, man.
What's the difference between Fed prison and, everyone always says Fed's easier, and that's where you go because you robbed a bank, so that's a federal crime, right?
It's not necessarily easier, but it's you're around a different level of criminal. I mean, you got guys in there who, you know, these guys maybe built some company out of $100 million, you know, Bernie Madoff, you know, billions of dollars. You got guys who are running, you know, $1 million fraud scams, you know, guys who, you know, who are running big drug empires. You know, they call them like Ricos. Or CCE, continual criminal enterprise. So it's a lot of big crimes. And in the feds, when they bring that grand jury indictment, they pretty much are saying they have enough evidence where you're going to have to take a plea deal. And so the level of criminal is different. I mean, and it's politics, but you can interact like with a white guy or Mexican a little bit differently in the feds because of the level of mentality. Where in the state, it's just straight, dude, dope fiend, lowball, grimy. Not to say the feds don't have that because it's not like it was back in the 80s where now you have a lot of illegals, a lot of gangs. It didn't used to be like that. It used to be like mainly mafia, high-level criminals, blah, blah, blah. But it's changed a lot. And it's just like the state where it's, you know, most of these guys never had any money. Where you get into the feds, you got guys, you know, these guys made, you know, $50 million, $100 million. You know, there's guys who were laundering money for the cartel and they laundered over $200 million. You know, I mean, so the level of criminal and what these guys were doing, whether it's running, you know, corporations, real estate, you know, some guys had their own jets. I mean, it's a whole nother level of what you're around, and the mentality is different.
Okay, so here's one. Who was one of the scariest people you ever met in prison?
I'm gonna grab a water bottle right here.
Okay.
You can keep going. You talk about
probably. I mean, there's a lot of people that you know that aren't about their jokes. They ain't messing around. But they're the guy I remember in Lompoc, USP. They call him Peoples, and I guess he had been around since the Cuban riots, when they had the Cuban riots back in the day. Because a lot of the Cubans, when, you know, they have been locked up since the 80s, you know.
A lot of Cubans in California?
No. Cubans, these are Cubans that had been locked up in Atlanta or in some of these other prisons when they had, you know, back during, like, the Scarface days when they were talking about the Cubans, when they had all the illegals that were over here and they just threw them in jail.
Yeah.
And, you know, these dudes were, you know, some of them, they said they let out, like, their worst of the worst in Cuba and sent them over here. Well, there were guys that were still locked up from that were hoping someday get out, but guys who've been down 30 years. I mean, there's this guy named Peoples. And, old dude, probably like in his 50s, 60s, because he'd been down probably since his 20s. But they said, like, oh, people ain't no joke, you know. And you see the dude working out, ripped, 50, 60, almost 60, like, ripped, no joke. And, hey, man, you could tell he's kind of crazy. You know, you could tell, like, you know, real polished. But you could tell, like, if you owe him some money, he's coming to get that. You don't want no problem with the dude. Yeah. Like, dude is like, he going to gut you. You know what I mean? Like, dudes who don't, life is like, if you play with me, your life will end. You know, it's not a game. And you got guys like that where you could tell. And I was, you know, I knew psychology somewhat, so I knew how to, like, kind of work around people. And I worked out, so people respected my ability to train. And, you know, I had been kind of familiar with nutrition and stuff, so I talked to a lot of guys like that, so I was able to get passes. But, like, you know, you met guys, there's, you know, because you got guys from different parts of the country, D.C., Baltimore, Virginia, Florida, Mexico, you know, California, everything's separate based on geographics and then race and then gang affiliation. So you can't mix and match that. But because I was involved in a law, I studied the law while I was in prison. I helped a lot of people with their habeas corpuses, with their post-conviction relief. I was able to kind of cross a lot of those boundaries. And then one of the guys found out I was in porn. like, oh man, you were doing porn robbing banks. You was a fucking gangster. Man.
Yeah, that's
so
a pretty great story you got.
You
know what I mean?
So dude's like, guard's like, hey, is that the goon? Hit him up, give him some new shit. So I go to laundry, I get new shit.
Yeah.
This guy's a real one right here. So I got respect like that, even though I talked the way I talked to the guys. They used to ask me, like, man, what are you in here for? Credit cards? I said, nah, man, bank robbery. Oh, man, but you had a note? I said, nah, man, I had a gun, man, hostile takeover, man, ski mask up in there, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, okay, okay, all right. Because, you know, if you're soft, credit card means you probably were on some really weak shit.
Yeah,
you know,
that's anyone.
Yeah, anybody do it, yeah. Like, you know, so they're going to, like, press you. Oh, your credit card? Okay. When you go to commissary, I'm going to take your bag. Thank you.
Okay, so let's say, okay, let's go this. I go in jail. First day I'm in there. Am I going to have to go walk up to the whites and be like, hey, man, what do I got to do? Am I getting butt fucked? What do I got to do? Do I have to go to the biggest guy and punch the biggest guy in the face? What do you got to do when you first
No, they're
going to
approach you.
Yeah.
And they're going to fill you out to see what you're in here for, especially the white guys. See, you guys' stuff is way different, you know, especially in the state. State, dude, I have friends that were prison guards in the state, and the white guys, their ship is really tight. And if you got anything that's not right on your paperwork, you're getting punished right off the top. If you're a child molester,
yes.
If you're a rapist, if you done did something that's not culture, they really like... You know, some of the blacks like, oh, that guy, you know, he had the case, blah, 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 maybe a kid. And they're like, oh, you know, they might be to do something like that. But like whites, they'll send somebody like a missile man or torpedo, and they'll just have the dude, he going to get you, man, because they don't play that. Like if you're a child molester and you're up in there, you know, it's like you're not walking the yard with us. You're not going to sit at the tables or nothing. So it's a lot more pressure for whites to basically follow a strict set of rules. And then for a Mexican, you got, depending on where you're from, north or south, or if you're a border brother, paisa, then they got it's all clicked up too. So you got to kind of figure out if you're going to ride with that or you're going to be a neutral. And they do have a neutral table for everybody. For myself, I went with the neutral table because I didn't have a bunch of homeboys in there. I wasn't in there trying to gangbang or be all you can be. And just the way I conducted myself, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to have some dude in here trying to call shots for me. So right off the top, they're like, who you banging? Where you from? I'm from originally from Sac, man. But I was in L.A. doing my thing, and I'm like, dude, I'm not with no bullshit. Oh, so you're not from those hood, no set, no blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I left that a long time ago. I was doing my thing in L.A., doing movies, do blah, 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 you know. So I was able to kind of, like, stay out of the bullshit, even though I knew Crip dudes, even though I knew some dudes that were from the Bay, I knew dudes who were Bloods, but I didn't really get tied into any affiliation in prison.
Okay, so then, like, when they go up and talk to you, are they asking you for your papers, like, you know, to see what you did, or are they just more like, what did you do? And if the guy's like not telling you, it's like, oh, he might be a fucking
pedophile. The best thing to do is to try to not open yourself up for conversation. Period. But somebody, some way, will try to pull you in for a conversation. But typically, when you show up, you'll have something that has your paperwork, and so you know, somebody show up and like, oh, what you in here for? And they're like, oh, you know, here, you know. You know, you have your commitment order that shows your paperwork. But for myself, like, I show up and people are like, oh, that was dude. He was in MDC. He a bank robber. So dudes already knew. You
That's
know what
cool.
I mean,
it's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, so people already knew that. Oh, this guy was, you know, he robbed the bank. I knew him. Yeah, I was in MDC, but that's a big hurt. Blah, blah, blah. So, but like, if you're kind of quiet, like I remember this guy, you know, kind of squirrely, quiet, you know, and people don't know what he's in there for. And then once the white dudes found out that he was in here for like some type of like porn, kiddie porn, something on the internet, dude, they were gonna mop his. He checked in quick, went straight to the ward. They put me in the hole. Let me check in.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to that. So you say send a guy. Now, if I am a pedophile and I go in there, do I just die, or they just beat the living shit out of me every day, or like what is the life of this guy?
They actually got institutions where they put predominant pedophiles. A homeboy of mine didn't know it. And he said he got sent to a spot, and damn near the whole yard was pedophiles.
Ooh.
And so they kind of like let these pedophiles program, and they had a shot caller for the pedophiles.
He had like the head pedophile?
Yeah, head pedophile. And he said, you know, he actually, because he was from up north, and he said he almost got into it with some dudes, even though he didn't bang, he almost got into it with some dudes from down south. But he said, dude, you can't tell me anything because you guys let these pedophiles walk the yard. But the head of the pedophiles, he said, unbeknownst to him, he had, you know, got into it with the dude to check the dude, and this dude was like ex-special forces.
The pedophile guy was?
The pedophile guy is a military dude that was up in there. Yeah, he told me a story. He got into it with the dude. And the dude, this is the first time, you know, he's a Golden Glove boxer. But he said, this for him, he got fucked up. And he said, dude, like, got him, you know, put hands on him. He's like, you know, he's like, damn, this dude was like, and then his buddy told me, he said, dude, don't ever, dude, that dude got kills on him, man. He's killed people in the military. So he said after that, when he caught the dude the next time, he caught him taking a piss and fucking beat the shit out of him, you know what I mean, and got him, you know, and played it off. But, you know, he was able to kind of justify because he couldn't let the dude, you know, just get over on him. This is literally, they got institutions where they allow these guys to walk around. A lot of them at camps. Like, you got, you know, see, they send the drug dealers to become, like, these guys from the hoods or whatever to, like, the USPs, level fours. But they'll send the pedophiles and stuff to the camps. And they're hanging out with all these other, you know, and people who got white collar and stuff like that. And they're can, you know, they get less time.
Yeah, they should just be put down.
Yeah, dude, it's like, personally. You know, dude told me, he's like, dude, there were guys in there, pedophiles, that were drawing pedophile comics. Sick, yeah. Sick dudes, man. He's like, you know, it's like you want to do something to a dude, but you catch a case. So you got to try to figure out how to get these dudes without getting caught up. But yeah, these dudes are running around in there, and he's a businessman. Like, most of these, they ain't nobody like regular people like us. These are like high level, you know, people who are in corporate America, you know, tied in to some of the stuff, man. You know, city officials. Yeah.
So, okay. So I'm in prison. Does everyone have a shank, or is there like one shank guy and he holds the shank for everybody, and then when you need it, you get it, or does everyone kind of walk around with some kind of weaponry on them?
Depending on where you're at, I mean, at a camp, it's not like that, but, you know, usually you have a guy who might be the designated, depending on whose day it is, and on some yards it's like that, but typically, like, if you're at a yard where it's cracking, everybody got to have their piece, you know, and dude's like, you got to have your piece, man, you know, and you got to figure out how to you know, get that shit through the metal detector, you know, put it up your butt, or however you're going to carry it. And that's how they do it. You know, some people just put it in their drawers. You know, I wouldn't put nothing in my ass, but, you know, you got guys that, you know, that's what they do. And so shit kicks off, you know. So you got to be ready because some yards are, especially at USPs or where it's more, you know, hostile, you know, you don't want to get caught slipping because it's like dudes don't care about who they stick when it comes to situations like that. So you got to be ready. But at a camp and stuff, you don't really have that kind of stuff happening. I mean, it's really laid back. And everybody's telling at camp, everybody's dropping kites on each other, meaning everybody's dropping notes. Oh, I seen Steve doing this. I think he's got a stash spot. Oh, I seen so-and-so. I think he's doing it. So these guys are telling all day long, man. No, these businessmen do that, doing all these embezzlement, laundry, man. They telling. Yeah. You know, but, yeah, at the USPs, it's, you know, you got to, at some spots, depending on what the whole vibe is, you got to keep your shank on you.
Okay, so how often are people really getting butt fucked? Is that really happening all the time?
You know what? Where I was at, I didn't, you know.
See that?
I didn't see it. And you're not looking for it. Like, if somebody tells you, hey, Steve, like the guy you're kicking on, you say, you know that dude at another spot, he had a boyfriend, he had a punk. Like, what? He's like, that dude? He's like, yeah, man, he had another spot, man. He was shacked up with a... So he's
stay the fuck away from that guy.
So yeah, as soon as you do that, I'm like, oh, I'm cool. You see the dude, you can't. Now, if he sees you out there, did you tell Steve? I told him. He's still, all right, we're going to have to check Steve now.
Yeah.
Because you're accepting that. You're cool with that. So I've heard stories of different stuff, but I've never seen that go down. And like, you know, you don't want to, you know, and you know, some places I heard they prey on dudes, get a dude drunk and they go in there and, you know, dudes like, you know, if they feel he's soft, like if you're walking around some tight ass pants on or something, dudes like, especially, and see, you got some dudes, I don't want to say the city, but there's some dudes from a particular state, they're like, they're predatorial. And if they see that, like, oh, okay. He's trying to put that thing out there. They're going to try to press you and see if they can get you. So you got to be careful, man. So there are predators in there. So you definitely got to watch out because dudes are try little, they call it sex play. They'll try to see if they can get away with you on you.
Oof. Okay, so now, are there any handicapped people? You ever seen like a handicapped guy?
I did see a dude in a wheelchair. I don't know if he came in there like that, but there was a dude, I want to say a guy, maybe from since he'd been in there, he's got like sick. Maybe he caught like pancreatitis or something, you know, something real bad while he was in there. But typically I've never seen like an amputee or nothing in there. I've seen a midget in there before.
Yeah, how'd that go?
He's a drug dealer. You know what I mean? He was known drug dealer.
Now, is he going to the same one with everybody else?
He used to play basketball and everything. Yeah, he was like, you know, he wasn't no punk. He was about his business and he was known on the street. Yeah, known drug dealer. Yeah.
Now, was he like I feel like he would be easy to pick on, though.
Nah, because he had a rep on the street.
Oh, so he had some guys.
So he had a rep on the street, so it wasn't like you know, like he was like no soft, like feminine. He was like a G, you know what I mean, from where he's from. So people respected him, and he just happened to be, you know, a midget, a little guy, you know what I mean? But he wasn't punked, you know. He wasn't like going for no bullshit, you know. So you have, and I've seen little guys up in there, like, you know, not necessarily midgets, but that aren't that big. But, dude, they're not to be played with.
Yeah.
You know, quiet. Mind their business, this and that. You know, you never know. You know, because it's the feds.
So okay, so are you in a cell with just another guy, or are you in kind of like the big dorm barracks?
I was always in 2-man cell. One time I was in a 3-man cell, but Long Park USP, where I first went, they call it Castle Grayskull. It's like one of the oldest USPs on the West Coast. Literally, you can do like this and touch both walls. That's how small it was in there. Like,
and you're with another,
yeah. And you're with another dude.
Yeah, me and you couldn't really get on the ground at the same time. We basically had to barely stand like this, like turn sideways. Toilet right here. I mean, it's like no room in there. Those places are like literally in your closet. Your closet's bigger than a Long Park USP cell.
So okay, so like, let's say I'm going into your cell. What's our first day like? Are we barely talking? Are you asking for my papers to make sure I'm not a pedophile? Are we like, are you trying to punk me? Or are we like being like cool roommates?
When you first get in there, when I first rolled in the first day, they were on lockdown at Long Park USP because somebody had just got killed. So when I rolled up in there, it was quiet, eerie, you know.
So it's your first day.
Going down the hallway, they're like, go all the way down to the hallway. You're in C unit. And you walk in there and they pop the doors and you're waiting. The guard opens the door. And they say, okay, Steve, where are you from? What you claim? You're like, oh, I'm with nothing. So no, where are you from? You better tell me right now. I'm going to put you in a cell with somebody. So they're like,
oh, they'll mix it. They'll put you so they make sure you don't put it together with the guy.
Yeah,
that
they're
you
like, who you, where are you from? So they're going to try to determine what your gang association is or what your hood association is so that they can put you with somebody, your people, because it's like, hey, I'm going to put you in here. So I arrived on a lockdown situation. So I went straight to another dude's cell who had already been locked down for like the last week. I didn't have no hygiene or nothing. So when I'm in there, it's 3 tiers. And very top, you know, it's like the very top, I don't know, 10, like 40, 50 feet up. And you're looking up, people yelling, hey, man, what's up? Where you from? Ooh, hi, yo, cuz, blah, blah. Hey, it's like crazy, like a dog kennel. Like,
oh, they're really all yelling.
Oh, like dude, yeah, it's like in a movie. They're yelling crazy. It's on lockdown. So I'm walking, got my little shit. You know, they pop the door. Where they pop the door, you got to walk in there. Dude's on the bunk. He's looking at you crazy, like, you know, he'll cut, where you from? You know, he say, blah, 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 what you in for? So, you know, already, you know, this dude, you know, he gang, so he want to make sure he ain't entering nobody weird.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I'm in for bank robbery. All right, then, cut. Go ahead and, you know, get on the wop, you know, get on the bunk, you know, make your bed. Ooh, but ain't no whole lot of talking. No. See, that doesn't happen until later on where a dude kind of fills you out and then a yard opens up because they'll have somebody call, get your number, and they'll go check and have somebody call the court to see what you got convicted of. So don't lie. They'll call and check. They'll have the girl do a search on you. So if you come in there and lie, you'll be on the yard, you'll be in a shower, they'll pack your ass out. You know, at the USP, they don't play.
So, okay, have you ever been in solitary confinement?
Yeah.
How was that?
Dude, it's
fucking gnarly.
It's just a whole mind trip. You know what I mean? Where, you know, it's just, you don't know what time it is. You don't know night and day. Only way you can gauge what's going on throughout the day is when you hear the trays coming. The morning tray, you know, that's morning time. Lunch tray, you know, okay, about 12 o'clock. Night tray, man, it's about maybe, you know, at 5 o'clock. And then that's the only thing because you don't know. It's like you're discombobulated. You're days become weeks. You don't know what day it is. You don't know what week it is. It's just like people go crazy in there, man. You know, if you're in there long enough, you can't go crazy. And you know, that's one of the things about being institutionalized is like a lot of people, once they accept prison, see prison, I was, you know, decent shape. So the physical, I wasn't really tripping. I mean, I would know how to handle my business, but it's the mental and not letting prison become who you are. Because once you accept that, then it's like you become an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to take that animal back out is hard. So a lot of people, they lose themselves in that type of world, and that becomes you. And then you're done.
Yeah. Because then you're like, just I'm going to stay in here no matter what. Yeah, well, so I don't
know. It becomes normalized. Just the whole, like, you know, I can, you know, if I were to become institutionalized and you come out and you have a discrepancy, you're like, man, I'm just going to kill this dude, man. This dude, you disrespecting me? You do bumpy, man. Did you not say excuse me? man, do you, what are you talking about? Sorry, man. No, man, let me, come here, man. You know what I mean? So you get to that point where you can't, you know, a lot of people, you can't let that happen. But once you buy into that, normal life, like your kids and being happy, enjoying, that stuff is like secondary. That's why a lot of these guys, they unconsciously violate to go back because in prison there's somebody. Shot caller, he done buffed the cell, he's doing this, he's a man. That same shot caller, or anybody who calls himself shot caller, on the street, you're sleeping on somebody's couch. You're riding one of them, you know, those bikes with the big handlebar. You see him riding around. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That guy's a dope fiend. Because dope fiends run shit in prison because dope fiends, they don't care. A heroin addict don't care, so he's willing to do whatever it takes, and that makes him a threat, which means people respect him out of fear. But on the street, he's nobody. Because that guy doesn't have a regular job. He can't sustain that. He don't have no businesses. He's not a business guy. You know what I mean? He's a drug addict. But in jail, they clean up. You know, so he's all that's serious to him. Food, his little property. That's his whole life.
Yeah.
So his value is like, if you mess with this, I'm going to kill you. But dude, you're going to kill me over this? Government shit? Because he has no value on the street. So he could be the man in prison. And it's a horrible, and you have to try to recognize these people to avoid them because you don't want to have to get into it with them and have to engage these individuals. But this is the type of mentality a lot of the people, especially in the state prisons, even is that you have a lot of that because 85%, I would say, of the people in prison are on heroin.
Yeah. So, okay. Perfect. Exactly what I want to do. So they're in there. So are a lot of people doing drugs at the prison?
Oh, man. There was guys in there. I used to wonder. I have to go buy a guy.
How do they get money from?
Why is the guy always, his light's always off? He's always, dude, always sleeping. And I didn't know later on he was on heroin. Heroin, he's nodding off. You take it, nod off. I mean, dude, these guys, little pinky fingernail and $20. Watered down, dude, they're slamming that shit. And they're sharing needles. That's how they're all getting hep C. Dude, the keister, needles from the work in the medical keister needles, then turn around and try to clean the needle and sharing needles, bro. Filthy, nasty, hep C. Dude, get a needle, he shoot it. He try to rinse it off, whatever. He shoot it. Yeah, man, dude, this is nasty, man. And heroin's big business in there. Whoever controls the flow of heroin, because if you get a little sack in there, dude, you're talking making $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month. Everybody's own you, but then now, and you got to pay all these other people, so it trickles down. And so you're circulating all this money, but when people don't owe, then it's all type of shit going on. You know what I mean? Because the biggest thing people get killed in prison for is owing somebody. Owing somebody, gambling, and messing with punks. Because another dude trips off a punk and this and that, and dudes, those are things they tell you. Said leave gambling, drugs, and punks alone. And no disrespect to, you know, somebody who's homosexual, but you go to prison, it's horrible. Dude, leave that shit alone.
So are they getting it from the prison guards, you think? Is a prison guard probably bringing in?
Or it could be through visits. I mean, there's drop spots. There's all type of shit. You know, there's ways they get it in there, you know, and there's people involved. And, you know, some institutions and guards and stuff, I mean, to make an extra $5,000-$10,000 a month.
Yeah.
Man, shit. You know what I mean? It's big money. You know what I mean? Or you get a guard, you corrupt them. Next thing you know, oh, she's bringing shit in. Oh, it's over by the trash can. You grab it. You distribute it to your homies. Make sure everybody's eating. Because people, in prison, man, if you could be that sneaky in prison with all these cameras, all these people watching you, you should be able to ball on the street because, dude, you got all the space. But in prison, everybody, because somebody looking at Steve, yeah, Steve always got a full locker. What the fuck is he doing? You know what I mean? People, they're watching you, bro. They see you go to commissary. See you go over here. See you, people always coming up to you. Like, what is he doing? Guards pretty soon, hey, man, let me holler at you. So it's just the whole, and you're under microscope for everything. So you got to be super sneaky on top of everything else. Because, I mean, I was doing legal work, and guards, like, looking, see me talking to people, and they're like, hey, what you doing? What you doing up in here, man? I know you're doing legal work, huh? Blah, 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 blah. But because I did legal work and because I knew how to file paperwork, they were like, I don't care what you're doing. Just don't file nothing on my staff. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they left me alone. You know what I mean? But, like, dude, they watch everything. They got people in every unit that's snitching. For, you know, cigarettes, whatever. So somebody's dropping dimes on all your business in there, but it's still happening.
So let's say I wanted my commissary to be pretty full. How much money do you think I'm spending a week?
You can max out. It's like usually $350 a month. But like some people, okay, if they're not going to store, you might have another dude go for you and you pay, you give him like some, you know what I mean? So he'll go for another 100, he'll go for another 350, but you give him 150, 100 bucks. So you have two or three people like that, and then you pay somebody to have, you know, food stealing out the kitchen, so somebody else might be stealing food. So you got, you know, guys in there who are able to get extra stuff, and they just work it, you know what I mean? And their lockers, they, some guys never go to the kitchen.
They just eat spread and stuff like that?
Yeah, because they got bank. There's guys in there balling. There was a guy in there, my buddy was, you know, knew a guy from Mexico who was a cartel dude who was balling out of control. He never wore the same pair of shoes twice.
In prison?
He gave it. He gave them away every day to paisas. He gave them away. He'd wear them, and then he'd give them away. So he rotated shoes all the time. He never cleaned a cell. Balling, bro. Balling. Wherever he was at, he had a spot for his wife and a spot for his mistress in the town. They come visit him.
So how often are conjugal visits a thing?
No conjugal in feds. That's the thing. No conjugal. Only in the state you get that. But in the feds, it's like, yeah, you get none of that.
Okay. How often are people you'll probably get wrap up here. We'll go on to how you came into your YouTube show. But one more. How often are people – you said they would be killed. How often were people killed while you were in prison?
Happened that Lompoc, often? Lompoc, you know, you might have something, you know, every – maybe depending on how it is, every couple of weeks or something. But like,
wow,
you know,
really?
But like at Beaumont, they had like they used to call it Beaumont, Bloody Beaumont. There was somebody, there used to be people dying every week, stabbed every week. Victorville, when Victorville was rocking, somebody every week getting killed.
Pretty fucking scary.
Oh, dude, they're not messing around. Somebody stabbed somebody, you know, and then after they clean it up, you can lock down for a little while, open right back up. Yeah.
And so, like, are you just, like, keeping your head – like, if you go to jail, you're cool with people, or prison, you're cool with people, you might pay off somebody a little bit, but you keep your head down, are you going to be okay? Or someone – you're going to have to do some shit.
Keep your head down, and then if somebody does try something, you just put down a quick demo, and then that's it. But
like, fight them real quick and just
– Just go off on them, you know, work to the point where they're like, damn, that dude, you know, he – And then you go to the hole, and they come back, and like people are like, that dude's crazy. You know what I mean? But don't open yourself up, because these people are experts at psychology.
Yeah.
Trying to, hey, man, what's up, man? So because they try to master that to manipulate you to get something. Yeah. Everybody's got some angle. Hey, Steve, you want a bowl, man? Oh, dude, I got some cigarettes, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, you got to really watch that. But the less you say, the better, because if nobody knows about you, they don't know who you are. So you want to become invisible. The less you say, the more – into yourself and not really opening yourself up, the better off you are.
All right. Your first day out, what'd you do?
First day out, man. My Sally's friend came and picked me up, and I came out here to Hollywood Boulevard, man, and got me a slice of pizza down at that pizza spot down there.
Yeah.
By Capitol Records, that little pizza spot down there. And it felt like I was just in a bad dream. Like I had just woke up. Cause I never bought into prison culture, so literally when I got out, I felt like damn, I'm out of the dream.
Yeah.
It was, like, surreal, like, because everything was still here. The Capitol, this, the Hollywood Boulevard, the tour buses and all this stuff, but I was almost 10 years older. I lost all that time. It's like somebody just stole it, like, pushed a button and the time was gone.
What was the biggest thing that you were like, what the fuck is this? Like,
oh, man, people talking with the things in their ears. I thought people went crazy. I'm like, man, people talking to themselves. What the fuck? What's going on? Because BlackBerry was the phone with the little ball, and people were talking to themselves. I'm like, man, who are they talking to? I'm like tripping out, and then MySpace was big. So everybody was on MySpace, and I'm trying to figure that out. And just, you know, just the technology aspect kind of blew me away, because I was always studying and reading stuff. I spent a lot of my money on books and material and educating myself, but you can't keep up technology until you get back into it. You're like, wow, this shit is crazy.
Okay, let's go into when you start. When you start going, I think I want to start a YouTube channel and start reaching out and showing a positive way of how you can change your life around that kind of stuff.
In prison, man. Actually, when I was in prison where was I at? At the last spot before I left, not Sheridan, but man, I can't. I'm like blank right now. The spot, but before I got out, I was I used to always go to the law library and study and walk the track and think of the ideas. I had a whole little journal. I used to write down a bunch of business ideas. But I remember coming back from the law library one night, and I'm looking at everybody sitting around TV, and it's like two of the TVs are on cops. I'm like, these dudes are watching cops in prison? This is miserable. That's Can you imagine in prison you're watching cops and they're getting thrilled off another person going down? Yeah. That shows you how low. I mean, that's crabs in a barrel for real. Like, oh, man, yeah, they got him. Literally, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to come out with a show. I said, man, I'm going to come out with a show called Fresh Out when I get out, man. And I'm going to document myself getting out and my journey back to freedom and blah, blah, blah. So initially, I had saved up my money while I was in prison, bought a camera, a little handheld, and was going to film my whole experience transitioning back to society. And then it kind of morphed into, you know, me kind of interviewing people and figuring out, like, to tell their stories, but tell them positive. There's enough negative with the cops, so I was going to show a positive. And so I got out in 2008, October, and in 2013, Ron, a little bit before that, I had met my business partner, and I told him about my idea. And he's like, yeah, man, that sounds like a dope idea. And I had a neighbor, and I always see him filming stuff. I'm like, dude, you a camera guy? He's like, yeah. I said, dude, I got an idea for a show. And he filmed our intro, filmed our first episode, and it just kind of, you know, took off organically. But I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I just knew that after I needed to do a show about ex-felons getting out of prison, and we were one of the first prison shows.
Yeah, I mean, what, you were at like 500,000?
Yeah, 560,000. They shadow banned us, bro. So our channel, we should be at over a million.
Yeah.
And, you know, but during all this stuff happening with the election, it's like our channel, we were getting 30,000 subscribers a month and it went down to like 100.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy. But yeah, we're at over a 500,000 subscribers.
When did you feel like you're like, hey, I think I'm fucking finally doing it?
You know, I looking at the thing that makes the biggest difference is looking at the comments. And all the people who, like, kids, you changed my life, Big Herc, man, blah, blah, blah. You know, oh, my dad was, you know, this and that. And, you know, he's abusive. And now I watch your channel. I went and got a job. Or, you know, I thought I was going to commit suicide. And after watching your show, you know, I actually pulled myself up. So when I started reading the comments and then people, you know, recognized me in certain public places, I'm like, dude, this is impacting a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all different cultures and nationalities.
Well, what was the say the name of your anything you want to plug, man? We really appreciate you coming by.
Fresh Out is the YouTube. Also, Big Herc 916 is my other YouTube. That's at like 113,000. It's motivation and inspiration and yeah, man, it's putting the good vibes out there, man. We, you know, dropping a lot of content and yeah, subscribe to our channels and our Instagrams.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming in here, buddy. I enjoy your YouTube channel. One of my producers, he had to go do a show in San Diego, but he was super stoked to meet you, so he's a little bummed about that. But he showed me all the Fresh Out stuff, and what I think you're doing is really cool. It's shining a light and, you know, taking a different perspective than what the media does. And thank you for doing it. Thanks for doing the podcast.
I appreciate the opportunity, and yeah, man, take care now.
All right, see you guys.